Hello, everyone. It's Paul D'Souza and Warren Giroux from Sightline Wealth Management for our weekly commentary and update call. Good morning, Warren. How have you been?
Good morning, Paul. It's been a while since we spoke. A lot has happened over the last couple of weeks. I'll just give you a flavor of what's been going on out there. Last week, we had some positive news out of the EU. The European investor sentiment was given a real boost with the economic package. It's been debated over the last couple of weeks over there. They came through with some major grants for the hardest hit of the 27 countries. I think that package is going to be about 390 million euros. They came up with another 360 billion euros of low-interest loans for businesses. We've also seen in the U.S. Debating on the extension of the unemployment benefits. There's quite a debate on that. It was $600 in addition to the current state unemployment benefits. That is going to be reduced somewhat. I'm not sure exactly where that's going to end up. Originally, it was talking $100 additional a week from the federal government. Then it was $200 a week, but I'm not exactly sure where that's going to end up. We also have seen a trend in the last couple of weeks, Paul, regarding the initial unemployment claims. As you know, they had gotten as low as 1.3 million per week. They rose 2 weeks ago to 1.4 million, 1.41 million, and this week they rose again to 1.43 million. So that's a little bit of a disturbing sign, but I think that's an indication of the reclosing or at least not reopening the economy as it was, sort of pullbacks or reversals in that as a result of COVID, number of cases rising. In addition, last week, Statistics Canada reported that retail sales fell in Canada 18% between February and May. And what was interesting, though, was the online sales jumped 99% over that same period. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Just here this week, we've seen the GDP number come out for the U.S., and it fell rather dramatically, fell 32%, which is worse than we've seen in any previous recession in the last couple hundred years. The estimate was 35, and it came in at 32.5 or something. We also have seen investors' confidence starting to decline as well. And again, I think that's in conjunction with the COVID increase in COVID cases. In July, the survey came in at 72.5. So that's a bit of a decline from June, which was 73.2. So, and as part of the survey as well, people were surveyed regarding whether they thought that the U.S. economy was going to be had confidence in the state of the U.S. economy, and the measure of the index right now, it's fallen to 82.8 from 87.1. So again, I think this is just a reflection of the increase in COVID and the reversal of some of the reopenings that have been going on. The good news, though, we had last week was on the housing front. And what we saw there was reporting of existing home sales rose by 20.7% in June, and new house sales rose by 13.8%. So that's rather encouraging, but I think that's also an indication, again, or a reflection of the millennials moving away from the cities or people moving away from the cities, wanting to give themselves more space as a result of COVID. COVID, as we've talked before, has changed behavior. And I think this is just a reflection of that behavior.
So I want to touch upon housing in terms of, so are house prices increasing as well?
From what I'm gathering, yes. Okay. Talking to a couple of real estate agents in the U.S., and yes, they are increasing, as well as in my local area where in New Brunswick we're seeing housing prices rise. We're seeing bidding wars, which we've never seen before. And other locations, of course, bidding wars are normal.
Okay, so maybe I want to just get to that maybe briefly just after this, but I want to ask one more question. So in terms of the disconnect between, you know, we've discussed this at length since March, and I know you've had some recent comments on that. Maybe you want to maybe summarize what you're seeing in terms of the disconnect of what's happening in the economy versus the stock market.
Well, just about everybody I'm talking to out there, and of course, it's been written quite extensively, the market is forward thinking. And of course, a lot of people have been thinking we're going to see a V-shaped recovery. And if we were going to see a V-shaped recovery and things were going to return to normal, then this market valuation bouncing back as quick would be anticipation of the return of earnings to support the market. But given the recent data and also the COVID coming back, I'm finding it very difficult, as many others are. We don't understand how the market can be at this level when we're seeing earnings and expecting that earnings even going forward are not going to recover as quickly as a lot of people thought. Couple that with some of the bankruptcies, we're seeing an enormous number of bankruptcies. We anticipate there'll be more, on top of the fact that we have global debt, and you know, in the U.S. it's, and statewide and federal, and all governments are increasing their debt loads, which portends to, you have to believe there's going to be tax increases, and tax increases, of course, dampen growth and further stall out the economic or the economy. So I just don't know how we can have this market at this level when, you know, it looks like we're heading into a perfect storm of more negative news coming down the road. So, this is very disconcerting, especially at these levels. But the market keeps sort of hanging in there more recently. And even today, it's only down marginally on the news that we've had over the last couple of days on GDP growth and so forth. And earnings are coming in mixed. The tech companies are seemingly having good earnings reports, whereas the traditional, more traditional bricks and mortar and value right. companies are reporting weaker earnings. So, yeah, exactly. There seems to be quite a disconnect, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, it goes by the old saying, there's always a bull market somewhere, and the investment winds are always blowing. It's just adjusting your sails in that correct direction, and technology versus old economy is definitely the place to be, given what the lockdowns and social distancing and quarantining is occurring. So back to inflation. I think we've discussed this on our previous call. I think it bears, you know, maybe another conversation about, you know, there's a big debate of is there deflation, no inflation, stagflation, inflation. And I think the correct answer for everyone to sort of wrap their mindset or framework around is inflation is always a personal figure. What the BLS in the States, what StatsCan from creates in Canada is a headline number. And the way that it's been calculated has changed, you know, literally 20 times over the last 30 years or more. And so it's not really representative of what inflation should be. And inflation should be measured by a fixed basket of goods in one time period and those exact same basket of goods in the next time period. So we discussed, you know, the hedonics last conversation and adjustment. But I think going back to the fundamental definition of inflation has actually been changed. If you go to the Webster's Dictionary, if anyone has one, I'd be curious to see if they look it up. Pre-1980, the definition of inflation was the increase in the amount of money in the money supply, leading to a fall in the purchasing power, leading to a rise of the prices of goods and services. And that was a classic monetary definition of what inflation is. Today, that's been stripped down to the rise in the prices of goods and services. And if you think about it, that just eliminates, like, that's the effect. But what causes? What causes the rise in the prices of goods and services? The presence of too much money. And now more money chasing the same amount of goods, obviously prices are going to go up. If you think about this, say with this, say there's a COVID-19 economic bailout package, and every individual or say family receives a check for $100,000 in Canada. What do you think will happen to the price of say real estate if everyone has an extra $100,000 in their pocket? My guess, it's going to increase. Logical. Maybe people pay down some debt, but I think real estate will go up. Why is that? Did anything fundamentally change with the price with homes, with real estate? Nothing. What changed? The presence of too much money. And so as Milton Friedman said, inflation is always and everywhere going to be a monetary phenomenon. And so we have to agree that, or logically think that, with the amount of stimulus that's been created, you know, that's going to find its way to inflation at some part of our lives. And going back to, it's a very individual figure, it's true. If you have children in post-secondary school, private school, just even the items that you purchase, if you calculate your own inflation rate, and you remember, go back to your bills and think, you know, if you do the grocery shopping, what you paid for it, you know, 5 years ago versus today, there's absolutely inflation. However, that headline number does not report it, just due to the way that it's, you know, that it's, you know, been changed. Mark Twain said famously, numbers are like people. If you torture them enough, they'll tell you anything you want them to.
Isn't that the truth?
Isn't it? And so, so going back then to, I can't recall now if we've discussed financial repression, and this is an important topic because this is a way for governments to get out of debt. And in 19, oh gosh, this post World War II, the U.S. had, I think between, yeah, about 1945, 1946, the debt to GDP was around 100%. And today it's the same number with money, many industrialized countries, it's even higher. And financial repression was a tool used to bring down that debt. And what they do is just basically strip the value out of money, basically confiscate the wealth of individuals in a surreptitious way, in order to reduce debt. And so it was very successful then. The IMF published a paper by Rogoff and Reinhardt on, you know, here's the model of how to do it. And so there's four ways of instituting financial repressions. You have to keep interest rates low. We have that. We're going probably negative. Inflation is higher. Keep inflation higher than the interest rates. Check. We have that. So there's two out of two. Capital controls. And that's basically keeping as much money in the U.S. in terms of taxing U.S. citizens, Canadian citizens worldwide, not having money to leave the country, keeping it all in-house. And involuntary funding of government debt. And so this is mandating, Arjun, you would know this in terms of pensions institutions, by their investment policy statements, have to purchase a certain amount or a certain percent of government debt. And so that keeps the printing machine alive in terms of funding the debt, in terms of buying the treasuries. So we have all four in place. And so why is gold rising? Kind of bringing full circle here, one of the most important fundamental factors for a rising gold price is it thrives in a low or a negative interest rate environment. So it's absolutely no surprise that gold is rising, given this. And also, if you look back to the classical definition of inflation, it's the increase in the amount of money supply leading to a fall in its value. And then the rise in the prices of goods and services. So there's a fall in the value of currency, but we don't see it on a daily basis. It's like watching our children grow. You don't see it happening, but it is occurring on a very surreptitious way. So gold is benefiting from that. And as long as rates continue being low, and we think they will be for the foreseeable future, gold's always a long-term hold. And how well it's thriving very well now. It's a bit of a rant more there.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good points there, but I would add this regarding inflation, and this is something that it's not classical, it's not taught this way, but as you said, the classic definition, of course, is too much money chasing too few goods.
Right.
This time around, though, I believe inflation is not going to be driven by too much money. I believe it's going to be as a result of too few goods. In other words, the supply side is being damaged. And what I mean by that is that if you look at COVID, we've had extreme supply chain disruption. Remember, it wasn't that long ago here, we had a shortage of toilet paper. And, you know, everybody was out there buying it. So we had a significant shortage. Toilet paper actually could have gone through the roof. It didn't, because people held the price and there was very little of it around. So I think you're more likely to see in this environment we're going through, especially as we work our way through this COVID crisis, as supply chains continue to disrupt, we're going to see a lack of supply available. And as a result, that will also chase prices up. And as a result of that, because you know, we're seeing that in housing. You remember a couple of weeks ago, we had one of our managers in Texas was saying that they do lot development, and they were saying some of the builders were starting to raise prices just because they couldn't build houses fast enough and they didn't have enough lots available. So they were increasing the price to keep their margins the same, and the consumers are still buying. So, yeah, I think the classical definition is one that we've all learned and studied in school, but I think there's other pressures out there today that there's never been a global shutdown of economic activity before. This is the first time it's ever happened. And so I think we're going to be revisiting this and over time and maybe reflect on it maybe in a little different way than we have thought in the past. These are very, very difficult times, and I think it's going to some of the impact is going to remain with us for quite some time. We've talked about the behavioral change that we've seen, and we think we're going to continue to see these behavioral changes as we make our way through this difficult period. So, I think, inflation, and you're right, I think inflation is very personal. I look at inflation as how much does it cost me to live, but that also includes the cost of my house. If I have one, or I have a mortgage or rent, but it also includes taxes. How much have taxes gone up? How much is being taken out of the economy and given to the government? And as we see the velocity of money start to slow, and we certainly have seen it slow in the last probably 3 to 4 months, that's a true indication of what's available out there for economic activity and growth. And as we give more to the government to pay down debt, yes, we've had the boost here. We've had this sort of sugar high over the last 3 to 4 months with additional stimulus payments and loans and so forth and so on. But that eventually will have to go away. And when it does, we're going to come crashing down to reality. And it's going to be, I think it could be a very, very difficult time for a lot of people.
Yeah, I know. Well said. In terms of the scarcity of goods more money, or the same amount of money chasing fewer goods, and if you add more money chasing those same fewer goods, it's even going to be a higher price. Well said. And I think maybe just in closing, I think fundamentally I think investors, if they just intuitively know inflation, they know the economy doesn't make sense in terms of the stock market with the economy. However, patience is, I think, a word that I'm thinking about now, is it takes time for these themes to develop. These low rates have been here for a while, but it took the last 6 months now, this crisis, monetary increases, and then lower rates for gold to really move out of its, trading range. So it's something that investors shouldn't be short-term thinking. The trend is there. You can see it ahead. It just doesn't happen overnight. It takes time for things to develop. And then when it develops, it happens very quickly. So it's one of those ideas where you have to be invested and just wait. Because when it happens, it'll move very quickly. And it's hard to have a reaction to it. And psychology plays over. The price moves very quickly. And you think, oh my God, I missed it. I'll wait until it pulls back. All of those common investor behaviors start to take over. And then before you know it, you're out of a very profitable move, just due to lack of patience. And the foresight's there, it's just the patience not. So,
yeah, I think that's a good point, Paul. A lot of people see the first initial move and they panic and they say they missed it. But as we pointed out many times, this is going to take us quite a while to get through this crisis. And so the initial move, yes, it's a big, strong move, and you feel like you missed it, but you have to be patient and wait for it and recognize the long-term trend that we're facing. I think, as you and I spoke before, even though gold has hit, I think, the all-time high here recently, the previous high, it's got a long ways to go. And I think given the fact that a lot of people are becoming more and more worried about government and the government's ability to manage the situation, they turn to precious metals, they turn to other stores of wealth. And gold and precious metals have always been a store of wealth. So I would expect, I wouldn't put a number on it, but I expect to see gold and silver much, much higher over the next several years as we work our way through this this situation we're in now, the current environment.
I concur. Excellent. Okay, great chat, Warren. Nice to hear from you. Have a lovely weekend.
Nice talking to you, Paul, and look forward to the next time. And yes, as well, have a great weekend. We'll talk next.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.